We are now going to speak to a gentleman by the name of Sherrod Blakely. Sherrod, thanks for doing this. How are you today?
Good, good. How are you?
Good. At Sherrod Blakely on Twitter, CSN New England, NBA reporter, covers the Celtics. Right off the top, what do you think of this deal for Kyrie Irving to Cleveland for Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, and that 2018 unprotected pick from the Nets?
Well, you know, certainly, you know, the Celtics, they gave up quite a bit to get Kyrie Irving. But when you look at the fact that this is a 25-year-old, four-time All-Star, Olympic gold medalist, has won, you know, a significant number of individual accolades. Clearly, from a talent standpoint, you know, the Celtics had to give up a lot to get a player who provides a lot. You know, but the real concern, if there is one, with Kyrie Irving is just whether or not he's going to be a good fit for this Celtics team, a team that has benefited with the collective sums being greater than any one individual player. But certainly in the Brad Stevens era, they haven't had a player quite like Kyrie Irving in terms of his individual impact on the game. So can his game mesh with the system that Brad Stevens has implemented, or will Brad Stevens have to make a significant change in order to really, you know, complement Kyrie Irving's strengths? There has to be a little give and take both sides, but where that middle ground is, that remains to be seen.
It's going to be interesting because here's what we're going to find out. We're going to find out who the fly in the ointment was in Cleveland, whether it was LeBron or whether it was Kyrie, I think. Or maybe it was a bit of both. Kyrie could be petulant. He could be moody. But was that because of LeBron or was that because of Kyrie? That's the question here.
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, first of all, he's an NBA player, so that yeah. moodiness yeah, is almost like an absolute, you know, must-have if you're going to be an elite player in the NBA. But, you know, I think Kyrie, when just talking with people the last couple of days about him, you know, he wants to be the captain of his own ship. He wants the pressure of having to carry a team and not be seen as just the sidekick. And there's a part of me that certainly understands that. But just from a pure basketball standpoint, for you to walk away from what it will be a team that can compete for a title for the next couple of years, at least, to do that and walk into a situation where the team that you're joining is very good, but maybe not quite as good as the one you're walking away from. That's certainly an eyebrow-raising thing to do. And again, Kyrie, bottom line is, he's going to have to win. He's going to have to get this Celtics team to the NBA Finals in the next couple of years in order for this trade, from a Celtics standpoint, to feel as though it was worth it.
You say he's walking into a situation where, in Boston, by the way, where he's leaving a team that is a perennial contender with a team that has become a contender. And I think he fits the Celtics really well. The interesting dynamic here is going to be Gordon Hayward. Commissioner Gordon Hayward, if we're going to talk Batman and Robin. Someone tweeted that in, which I thought was quite clever. And Kyrie Irving, how they're going to fit together, right? And look, Marcus Smart's butt is going to be glued to the bench. He's not going to get into a game anymore with Kyrie Irving there. Kyrie Irving plays minutes. I mean, maybe Smart gets 10 minutes, 11 minutes a game, or maybe they, you know, I don't know if he slides to the two at any time, but you're right. He goes from a team, and I was talking about this before you were on the air, and if you're just joining us, we have Sherrod Blakely, Celtics NBA reporter for CSN New England with us. It's 11:08. It's Joey Vendetta at Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And if you look at, Sherrod, the lineup in Cleveland, they have arguably the best bench in the National Basketball Association, don't you think?
It's impressive. I mean, when you look at, you're going to have a guy like Jay Crowder probably coming off that bench, Derrick Rose coming off that bench, the Channing Frye's of the world. I mean, they can hit you in a lot of different directions with that second unit. But going back to your point about Marcus Smart, he's actually going to play a decent amount of minutes, and here's why. At some point, they got to play defense. And right now, Marcus Smart is the only legitimate perimeter defender that they have on his roster. And Brad Stevens, that's a big part of why this team has evolved, you know, every year Brad has been there, to be a little bit better than they were the previous year, because they've had a number of perimeter defenders. Now, obviously, with the addition of, you know, Kyrie and Gordon Hayward, you know, the dynamics of how they defend will change, but I still think that's going to be something that they're going to have to get better at as the season progresses, because as we've seen, if you can't defend at least a mediocre to slightly above average level, regardless of how good you are offensively, it's going to bite you at some point as you try to make that journey towards being a title contender. We saw it in Houston, had a great season, but defensively they just couldn't get it done. And Cleveland to a lesser extent. You know, they were a team that on paper looked potentially to be really good defensively, but they had a lot of struggles throughout the regular season. I thought they really got a lot better in the playoffs. But again, as much as we like to talk about what guys can do offensively, and that's a big part of the NBA allure, and that's a big part of team success, you got to get it done at the other end, at least be mediocre to slightly above average if you are going to have that long postseason journey that all these teams are trying to have.
I just look at the depth chart of the Boston Celtics, and I look at the depth chart of the Cleveland Cavaliers, and I look at the depth chart of the Washington Wizards and the Toronto Raptors, and I try to figure out what this has done to the balance of power in the East. And ESPN picks the Raptors to finish sixth in the East. They picked Charlotte ahead of Toronto, which I think is preposterous. But, you know, I mean, you get Dwight Howard, who basically is Frankenstein now. He can barely move. And you've got, you know, Kemba Walker's great. Michael Carter-Williams is I won't say a bust, but he's all right. Nicholas Batum. I mean, Kid Gilchrist is decent at the three, but I don't know where they think Charlotte's going to finish ahead of the Raptors. Where do you think, or how do you think, more importantly, the East stacks up now after this deal?
You know, but before the deal, I thought Cleveland was, you know, the best team in the East, and after the deal, I still think they're the best team, although I think the Celtics have given themselves, I think, a better chance to compete against Cleveland in the playoffs. I think regular season-wise, the Boston and Cleveland are going to be the top two teams, but I do believe that adding a guy like Kyrie Irving gives Boston a much better chance to actually, you know, take that next step and either, you know, get back to the conference finals and make it more of a series than we saw last year, or take what has to be that the next step for this franchise, and that's get to the finals. Kyrie Irving, you know, as much as LeBron, and again, LeBron is an awesome player, easily the best player, I think, in pound for pound in the NBA right now, and certainly one of the all-time greats. But Cleveland, as great as he's been for Cleveland, it's not like Kyrie has just been along for the ride. I mean, he's come up with big plays, maybe the most iconic big shot in that franchise's history, Game 7, you know, at Golden State. So the Celtics have a guy that has done some really amazing things in the playoffs. But the point that I think a lot of people are making, and it's a valid one, he did that as Robin. Can he be Batman going forward? Can he be the guy in the spotlight making those big shots throughout, not just, you know, in late game situations, but throughout the course of the game where so much attention is focused on him and what he can do? That remains to be seen, and that is why, you know, I think a lot of people are on the fence about whether this is a great deal for Boston because of that one unknown.
I wonder what is going to happen in Cleveland from a chemistry standpoint with Isaiah Thomas, who is a prickly, bristly character. You know Isaiah Thomas better than most because you cover the Celtics. What are the Cavaliers getting in Isaiah Thomas? We know they're getting an intense player. We know they're getting a guy that, I mean, his sister gets killed in a single car accident, and he plays the next game. He had a rough time, but he played, and he played well. But he's got some hip issues, and at times, I'm not going to say he's Kyrie Irving in terms of being brooding, but not the easiest guy in the world to get along with at times.
No, he can definitely be that. The one thing about Isaiah that all tends to transcend anything and everything else is he's a tough guy. He mentally is very, very just rigid, very gritty. The kind of guy that if you're in a battle, you want him on your side and not the opposition. I think he'll be a good fit because the one thing he showed in Boston was the ability to play both on and off the ball. The big question mark for him, and it's always going to be there, is whether he can defend well enough to really help you, or I should say not hurt you. I think that's the big concern with Isaiah, and also that hip. You know, Danny Ainge in his conference call with reporters yesterday indicated that Isaiah may not be ready to play at the start of the season because of that hip. And that was, to some degree, a factor in their willingness to trade him. So if he's not able to be physically at the level that he's accustomed to, that we've seen him play at, this is going to be a major issue for the Cavaliers, because, you know, they're looking for Isaiah Thomas to be all-star Isaiah Thomas. And if that hip is giving him problems and he doesn't have the mobility that we've seen in the past, or frankly, the ability to finish around the rim, this is going to be a bad, bad deal for Cleveland.
Sherrod Blakely's our guest again on Twitter @Sherrod Blakely. And he's an NBA reporter for CSN New England. And look, does it really matter anyway what the East has done when you look at Golden State's lineup? And again, I will argue that the Cleveland Cavaliers bench is better than Golden State's, but if Golden State stays healthy, it doesn't really matter because they only get seven guys into the lineup anyway. Their starters are so good, they're so young, they're so athletic that it doesn't really matter. Houston's gotten better picking up Chris Paul, and who knows if they end up getting Carmelo Anthony. I mean, you want to talk about locker room issues. If you got Chris Paul and Carmelo Anthony and James Harden on the same team, that could blow up too. But you've got Memphis, which is quietly good. The Lakers aren't, you know, the Lakers will maybe make the playoffs. The Clippers, I don't know if the Clippers are any good anymore. They've, you know, losing Chris Paul is a huge blow to them. I don't know that Patrick Beverley is going to be any good to replace him. Minnesota's gotten a lot better in picking up Jimmy Butler and should improve from being a, you know, 20 under 500 team. But you go down that list, Oklahoma City with Paul George. Again, that's a two-player team. Patrick Patterson's going to be a nice pickup for them, but is he going to be a difference maker? So does it really matter, Sherrod, what the East does? The West is pretty stacked, and I didn't even mention San Antonio. I didn't even mention Portland. I mean, it's kind of an embarrassment of riches in the West.
The race is for number two in the NBA. I mean, really, if you're the best team in the East, you know that at your best-case scenario is being runner-up. You know, you're going to be the Susan Lucci for the next couple of years. Close, but not quite good enough to win it all. And, you know, the Celtics, I think they're okay with that, because for them, it's all about the opportunity. Position yourselves to where you can compete for a championship, because, you know, strange things can happen when you get into, an NBA Finals. There's always injuries and rhythm and momentum and all those intangibles that could play a role. But certainly, Golden State is the standard everybody is measuring themselves up against. And no matter what Cleveland does, no matter what the Celtics do, that's not going to change. Golden State is the overwhelming favorite to repeat. And until teams show otherwise, that's not going to change. And the Celtics, yes, I think they've made a move that I think will help them down the road. I don't think it's going to make a significant impact right away. But that's okay, because the way they're built, that's part of the plan, to be able to compete in the present while preserving opportunities to be really good down the road. Because, you know, we haven't talked about Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown or, you know, the draft picks that the Celtics still have coming down the pipeline down the road. So they're in a position where they can compete now and down the road. And for them, for now, that's good enough.